Now our study today will take us into chapter 39 of the book of Genesis. Before we turn to the chapter, let us bow for prayer. Our Father, we bow before Thee now, asking that Thou wilt encourage our hearts today as we look into the perfect law of liberty, as we examine Thy dealings with the young man of old. May it be that our hearts will be cheered as we realize that Thou art the God of the individual. Bless every listener now, for the Lord Jesus' sake. Amen. In our last study, we were looking at Genesis chapter 38, a dark, dark chapter, in which we saw the sin of one of the sons of Jacob was the sin of Judah. And while God overruled in that matter, and God's grace was demonstrated, nevertheless, Judah stood to be condemned. I said then it was a dark, dark background for a beautiful portrait that will be set before us in chapter 39. So with this chapter, we resume the history of Joseph. And we'll take note that the plan of Joseph's entire career was heaven-ordered. Now, Joseph didn't understand that at the time, but he understood it later on. It was all ordered according to the purposes and the plans of an all-seeing God. So the chapter opens like this: as Joseph was brought down to Egypt, and Potiphar, an officer of Pharaoh, captain of the guard, an Egyptian, bought him of the hands of the Ishmaelites, which had brought him down thither. And the Lord was with Joseph, and he was a prosperous man, and he was in the house of his master, the Egyptian. Now, when you come to verse 20, near the end of the chapter, we read, "And Joseph's master took him and put him into the prison, a place where the king's prisoners were bound, and he was there in the prison. But the Lord was with Joseph, and showed him mercy, and gave him favor in the sight of the keeper of the prison. And the keeper of the prison committed to Joseph's hand all the prisoners that were in the prison, and whatsoever they did there, he was the doer of it. The keeper of the prison looked not to anything that was under his hand, because the Lord was with him, and that which he did, the Lord made it to prosper." It's a wonderful chapter. So therefore we're looking now at Joseph, the outstanding star, as it were, in the family of Jacob. There are about five different angles from which we could view this beautiful character called Joseph. In the opening verses, we see Joseph portrayed as a traded slave. But from verses 3 through 6, we see Joseph as a trusted servant. But verses 7 through 12, we view Joseph as a tempted saint. Verses 8 through 12, again, Joseph the triumphant soldier. But verses 13 through 23, Joseph, the true sufferer. Let us view these things for a little time. Joseph, the traded slave. First of all, there was the exchange of position. This was an experience of great trial for Joseph, for it meant the loss of his position as a son, and now he's being purchased as a common slave. Can you possibly picture in your mind what would be the sentiments of his heart, the thoughts of his heart, to think of what he had been, honored by his father, wearing the coat of many colors, put in the position of dignity, And now his own brother stripped him of that coat, and at this point Joseph wouldn't know what would become of it. He just knew that he had been stripped of his coat. He had been taken away from home, sold into the hands of strangers, taken down to Egypt, placed upon the block to be sold as a common slave. Oh, what a difference! The man who was the honored son, now standing in the common marketplace to be sold as a common slave. But you know, God overruled it all, and the man who bought him was called Potiphar. He must have had plenty of money. He needed the slave, so he bought the slave, and Joseph became his slave. It certainly was an exchange of position, but it never changed his character. He remained the same. Then there is the evidence of prosperity. Circumstances by themselves cannot produce or guarantee prosperity. The truly prosperous man is the man who lives according to genuine hope. And this hope is only possible when it is settled in the living God. And so while Joseph may have been rudely taken away from home and treated in a despicable way by his own brethren, and then sold and bought as a common slave, nevertheless, this man maintained his faith and his trust in the living God of his fathers, and God prospered him even down there in Egypt as a common slave. So because he had his confidence in the living God, we follow this man through now as he becomes the servant or the slave in the house of Potiphar. In verses 3 through 6, we learn how much his master learned to trust him. For verse 3 says, "And his master saw that the Lord was with him, that the Lord made all that he did to prosper in his hand. And Joseph found grace in his sight, and he served him, and he made him overseer over his house, and all that he had he put in his hand." Isn't it remarkable that even an Egyptian idolater of that day should see that Joseph was being blessed by God? And it came to pass from the time that he had made him overseer in his house and over all that he had, that the Lord blessed the Egyptian's house for Joseph's sake. And the blessing of the Lord was upon all that he had in the house and in the field. And you read at the end of verse 6, "And Joseph was a goodly person and well favored." Here we see Joseph then as a trusted servant. Notice what his master observed. I suggest there must have been something about Joseph's manner, something about his ability that was strikingly impressive. He lived his life before his master in such a way that his master took note of it. Now remember, this was in spite of the adverse circumstances. Now it seems that Joseph left the issue entirely with God. He just left it with God and waited God's time. But each day he performed his daily task without a grudge or without a grouse. He didn't complain. He just left the issue with God. While he could not understand, he accepted it from God's hand. And so his master promoted him. He made him the overseer of the house, put him in command of all the affairs of the house, and all the other servants would have to be obedient to Joseph. So he was soon promoted to take charge of all that his master possessed. And in these circumstances, once more, God caused him to prosper. But more than that, not only did God cause Joseph to prosper, but God blessed the house of Potiphar because of Joseph. I wonder today how many people there are who have been blessed, and perhaps they're not aware of it. They've been blessed because that in their employment they have good people whom God may be blessing, and God blessing their servants, now secondary, He's blessing them. So therefore, my friend, you should take note of this, that God blesses whom He will. But there's a very strange part comes in here in this particular passage, and it's the thing we've got to see in contrast to what we had in chapter 38. Here we find Joseph as a tempted saint. Now, doing the right thing and acting in the right way does not exempt us from temptation. When you come over to the New Testament, in the Epistle of James, we are reminded of what is called the trial of our faith. And the trial of your faith may be a very, very precious thing. Now, the devil is not going to allow Joseph to be left alone. He stirred up his brothers against him and got rid of him. And no doubt the devil perhaps thought he had scored a great victory against Jacob as well as against Joseph when he disrupted that home and got those 10 brothers to sell Joseph down into Egypt. No doubt the devil was gloating over that. But if he was looking to Joseph, expecting to put Joseph again through his sieve, expecting to upset Joseph and disrupt all his life, he's making a mistake. Even when they put him down the pit, God was with him. When they put him down as a slave to work in Potiphar's house, God was with him. And so the devil let loose at this man again. Now make the contrast for a moment or two. In chapter 38, Judah, his brother, was in the very best of circumstances. And under the best of circumstances, he sinned. And his sin was grievous. Here you find Joseph now, what you might say, in the worst of circumstances. And he is tempted. But while Judah gave in when he was in the best of circumstances, you find that Joseph is going to stand the test when he was in the worst of circumstances. Remember, he was away from home. He was down in the house of Potiphar. And Potiphar's wife was a sinful woman. And the devil used her to throw the temptation across the path of this man Joseph. Temptation is one of the great tests of life and one of the great tests of character. You don't really find out a man's true character when you watch him in prosperity. When everything is going well with us, that is not the test of our true character. But it's when things begin to go against us. For example, when a man wins in a competition, that is not when you see the true character of the man, but it's when the man loses, then you see what is really in the man's heart. It's easier, you see, to accept a great win, to score a victory, than it is to accept defeat. But here is Joseph now, while he's being prospered, the temptation is thrown across his path. It was a wicked temptation. It was a vile temptation. Yet he stood the test. You know, I like to think what he said. He said, "How then can I do this great wickedness and sin against God?" You see, Joseph was a man who called things by the right name. He knew what to do. Temptation, when overcome, will transform innocence into virtue. Being tempted, of course, is not a sin. Now let me get that over to all my listeners today. You have been tempted, haven't you? Of course you have. Who hasn't? Temptation comes to one and all. Temptation comes to those in high places, as well as those in low places. The rich are tempted as well as the poor. I should say this, the poor are tempted just as well as the rich. Temptation comes, but it may come in a different guise to one as to another. But when you are tempted, remember this, if you can overcome the temptation, it transforms innocence into virtue. And again I remind you that being tempted is not a sin, but yielding to the temptation is the sin. Now get the difference. We may all be tempted, but it's when we yield, when you yield to the temptation, that is the sin. Now what was the cause of Joseph's temptation, may I ask? Read the passage. You'll find it was his beauty, I think. That was one thing. His good position and ability. See? Was it his age? Was it the circumstances of life? My friend, what is it that brought the temptation to you? Was it your beauty? A lot of people have been tempted because of their beauty. Many a one has been put in the position of being crowned as the queen, and then the old devil comes along with the temptation. Some have been tempted because they obtained a position, and because they have great ability, the temptation comes. Others have a temptation because of their age. Certain time you reach a certain age, and the devil throws the temptation along. Some are tempted because of the circumstances of life. Whatever it was, Joseph stood the test. Oh, I remind you again, my friend, it's not a sin to be tempted, but it is a sin when we yield to the temptation. Yield not to temptation, for yielding is sin. So we used to sing when we were children in Sunday school, and how true that is. But now I like to think that here we have another portrait of Joseph, and that is Joseph as a triumphant soldier. Verses 8 through 12, we see him standing the test, coming through with flying colors. He put his flag right to the top of the mast. Plain words. He refused to submit to the temptation. Joseph did not dilly-dally with the temptation. He did not parley in any way with the temptress. He stood his ground, able to say no. How can I do this great wickedness? Called it by its right name. And he realized this, that sin was not simply sin against Potiphar's wife. It wasn't simply sin against Potiphar. Joseph said, sin is against God. You see, he reasoned against it. He refused to submit. He refused to give in with what the temptress said. And he reasoned like this. From the point of loyalty to his master, number one. From the point of faithfulness to God, number two. And when he reasoned on this, that I must be loyal to my master, and I must be faithful to God, Joseph had the courage to say no. And then he ran from the temptation. He didn't stand by and dilly-dally. You know, there are some temptations, and they are more effectively mastered by flight than by fight. In plain words, you've got to flee from them. And the temptation to impurity is one of them. When the temptation is for something that is impure, the best way is to flee from them. Turn and run. I know there's an old saying that he who turns and runs away lives to fight another day. I suggest that in connection with this, one should read the book of Proverbs chapter 7. should also read 2 Timothy chapter 2, verse 22, and you'll realize the scriptural meaning for running away from temptation. Don't stand around to let it throw its fiery darts at you. Just get your back turned to it and run. Get out of its area altogether. But there's a fifth portrait here of Joseph, and we see Joseph the true sufferer. Let me mention this. Joseph lost his coat. You see, this wicked woman, when she realized that she could not overcome Joseph, and Joseph was preparing to run, she laid hold upon his coat. She was going to hold him. But he let her have the coat. He slipped out of it. He left his robe or his coat with her. But he kept his character. My friend, listen, it's better to lose your coat if you can keep your character. You know, in some factories and offices, it was the custom for the supervisor to be given a special coat. You could always tell the supervisor he wore a different color of coat from all others. But I've been in places where the man who wore the supervisor's coat came in some days without it and had to go back again and work like an ordinary workman. Some folk wondered why he lost his coat. It wasn't because of his inability. Oh no. It was because he refused to do what was wrong. And because he would not do what was wrong, he was prepared to give up his place. Lost his coat, all right. But he kept his character. That's what Joseph did. It's better, my friend, to keep your character, even if it means losing your coat. That's the second time that Joseph lost a coat. The first one was given to him by his father and was taken from him, stripped from him by his brothers. That was a coat of many colors. And now here he was given another coat as the chief overseer in Potiphar's house. And he lost that. But he still kept his character. But then again, he lost his good position, but retained his godly purity. Purity is more important than position. If keeping a position means that you've got to sin and defile yourself, it's far better to give up the position and live in godly purity. You see, character and godly purity is far more important than having the coat and the position. He was a man who suffered a woman's malice, and he had to suffer under her malice, but he obtained the mercy of God. The mercy of God is more important. It's better to have the mercy of God than to be under the malice of a sinful woman. His master put him in prison, but God made him to prosper. See, Joseph was a man of God. He put God first in everything, and whether it was in his father's house or in Potiphar's house or in the prison house, God made him to prosper. Joseph suffered because of the iniquity of his brethren and the intrigue of a sinful woman with the injustice of Potiphar, his master, but God, working his own plans, will turn all these things to Joseph's good and to God's glory. Thinking of the temptations that Joseph passed through, I remember finding somewhere this report concerning a strange old epitaph on a tombstone. And it said, "Here lies an old soldier whom all must applaud. He suffered great hardships at home and abroad, but the greatest encounter he ever was in was the battle with self for the conquest of sin." Joseph knew something about that. Joseph came through the battle. He came through with triumph, and God prospered him. And so we're looking now at Joseph, and there will come the turning point in his life, and the blessings of God will be upon him.